Welcome to Rethink Association, your one-stop destination for all things association marketing. We're spending 15 to 20 minutes each month diving into the intricate world of association marketing, unraveling the strategies, tactics, and trends that drive success for these vital organizations. Get ready to supercharge your marketing efforts and gain a deeper understanding of the unique challenges and opportunities that associations face. Right here on Rethink Association by High Road Solutions.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Rethink Association. I am here with Gareth Swain per usual, but today we have a special treat in that we now have Manisha Menges, our Chief Experience Officer, joining us for our podcast today. So, Manisha, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me. This is my first podcast ever, so I'm very excited.
Ooh, that is exciting. Well, thank you for coming on with us.
I'm not sure that I knew that this was your first podcast, Manisha, so this actually is really exciting for me now, too. I thought you'd been on at least one before.
I have not, no.
Excellent. Well, over here at High Road, we are just getting back into the swing of things. And when I say that, I mean, we hit the ground running hard the first week back. As most of you know, we were out for the final week of 2023. And all of our teams pretty much hit the ground running hard this week, as most of your teams did as well. But before we get into all of our exciting topics for today, since I haven't seen Gara or Manisha very much this week, did you all have a nice holiday? Any exciting things that we need to know about or that you want to share?
Yeah, so not too much happened over here for Christmas. Just, you know, spent it with the kids and the family and went over to my grandma's house, opened presents. The kids got way too much stuff. I don't know, Manisha, if your little one got too many things and you had to find places for it all, but I did. So our whole playroom is now reorganized to make sure everything can fit. We have to go through and get rid of some stuff and donate some stuff here coming up shortly.
Well, I'm impressed that you actually reorganized, because our stuff is still in bags and boxes scattered throughout around. I haven't even put back the Christmas tree. So yes, it's probably going to be necessitated by I lost my toy, my brand new toy. That's going to be the thing that, again, forces us to, like, maybe we should probably clean up. But yeah, we're still hanging on to 2023 a little bit.
Nothing wrong with that. I know today I was like, oh man, it's 2024, because I was writing a date and I was like, I almost wrote 2023 again.
Mm-hmm. I definitely had that happen quite a bit. Our Christmas, people called me, including my mother, called me Scroogey, because the day after Christmas, and I'll be honest, when I got home on Christmas Day from my parents, I was like, well, that tree needs to come down. But I was like, leave it one more day. But as most of my accounts know, I have cats. So the tree was already in danger for the entire holiday season. So I felt that getting it down sooner would be better. Luckily, both of my cats were very good with the tree, so only the bottom rung of my artificial tree is destroyed for next year. But one of my big things I did over the break was I like to go to the holiday store that's right down the street, and they do a 50% off sale. So I got myself a backup artificial tree for when this tree meets its demise. So nothing really exciting on the Christmas front. I spent time with friends and family as well, but very exciting for us, you know. To my mom lives in Florida, so when she comes home, it's really nice to have her here. So, but on another note, and back into the work life, I know that we tried to ease you in easy on this podcast with talking a little bit about the holidays and ease you in, but back to the work related world, we are going to be talking about game theory for marketers today. So we want you to kind of think back about how your sales and your marketing teams are qualifying your leads, or how they were doing it in 2023 and maybe rethinking it for 2024 as you listen. Are you following up with all of your leads and adding them to campaigns and reaching out, or are you taking it a step further to make sure your association is reaching their target audience for membership? So some folks, a lot of my accounts do understand and are working with lead scoring a lot in terms of their marketing efforts. I have some folks that said this is a 2024 problem. I quote unquote, if you will, a 2024 problem where we're going to try to be better. So that's why I kind of thought this was a good topic for this week or for this month. So Gara, why don't you tell us a little bit for those who aren't aware what kind of lead scoring is and how it can be really beneficial in the marketing world?
Yeah, of course. So if you're not familiar with lead scoring, which some of my clients aren't really doing it, but it is something, like Morgan said, they're interested in learning more about as we go into 2024, it's where we're assigning points or a value to the leads you're bringing in. So it can be based off of information that is shared, engagement from the website, engagement across the internet. So whether that be social media, looking at your Google ads, things like that. You can add points and or values, whichever you choose, in order to make sure that the sales and marketing teams are prioritizing leads and responding appropriately. So with assigning those and getting back and responding appropriately, that can increase the rate at which your leads are becoming members. Every association can use a different model for assigning lead scores. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation. Each association or company or organization can have different values for each thing. So one organization may have 10 points or assign a value of 10 for somebody who is filling out a form. Or it could be higher than that. It could be 50 points. Or it could be 5 points for engaging with the website, things like that. So it's definitely based off what your sales and marketing team feel is best to reach those target audiences.
Yeah, I like what lead scoring kind of implies. And it's powerful when you sit down to do it because it's a mechanism that lets you almost read minds. So that's why I'm always interested in it. It speaks to me kind of from that perspective of some predictability where things are very unpredictable because you don't know who's coming in what capacity and more so where their head's at, right? So even if you just think about like, Stark Morgan, I was just having inner monologue with myself as I was listening to you talk about going across the street to the store the day after Christmas and getting everything that's on sale. I wish I had the discipline to do that, but I can't. That's never going to be me because I'm also influenced by the people in my household who are like, ooh, box, let's open it up. Even if it's the most boring, mundane thing, it's a box to open and therefore potentially could be a gift, right? But it's I'm struck by like knowing the kind of, not only, you know, going kind of the persona route and kind of trying to understand, like, is this person fitting a certain persona? And this is how, what their buying behaviors are. And these are their behaviors in terms of how they consume information, but also just literally where their head's at. Like if Manisha goes to the website and looks at the pricing page and then looks at some comparative matrix and then comes back and reads a review, those all rack up and tell you my state of mind, but is it enough for me to say like, let's add it to cart or never mind and I'm out of here, I bounce, right? And so what I like about lead scoring is that very much in the moment tells you the degrees of warmness, right? So again, back to that game, I have a 7-year-old, I play a lot with him. I try to kind of introduce him to games that I know, and I don't know very many now, but you know, it's like the warmer cold, right? Like you're getting warmer. You can see the glass. It's literally in front of you, but you're looking at it, but you're not reaching for it. So warmer, hot, cold. And I think just fundamentally, that's super helpful, right? Like, because as marketers, you have one, you can't read their minds. So you don't know where their head's at. Like, are they really going to take that coupon and go into the store and buy something? Or are they going to put in their pocket and say, this is great, and then forget about it, right? But they visited something that maybe you could take some action on. I feel like lead scoring is a way to kind of peer and not be creepy stalkerish, but kind of maybe.
Well, yeah. And Manisha, that reminds me of the Vercon session that we did where it was very Stephen King focused and we did the mystery and the being stalking without stalking kind of concept, being able to kind of read if your clients are paying attention or or whatever. So I do think that, you know, the lead scoring is a very good way to get to know your members and be very involved in seeing what they're doing, but then also be able to kind of go from there and figure out what they actually, where they actually fit into kind of your funnel.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of cool, especially what Gara, what you said, which is you can assign points based on different types of activities and behaviors and what we know about you, right? So it's not like it's locked in stone, but it also tells you kind of like where the organization that's trying to do the tracking is in terms of what they want to accomplish, right? So are they just trying to capture insights and data? And that's why you get points for giving your email address and giving points for your phone number or signing up for SMS. Or are they more like, no, I care about where you are in the funnel and you got to get further down. So I'm going to give you points if you download my free thing and then you click on the coupon link. And that's what we care about, right? So I like that because, again, it gives you some variability, but also tells you a lot about where everyone's at and where their priorities are. Because when you talk about this between this marketing function, you end up now really starting to surface like, ooh, maybe we're not aligned because everybody's all focused on this when in fact, you know, we've got other needs in other areas.
Yep. And as most of our, I mean, a lot of our podcasts have kind of all mirrored the same instance of having all the teams be aligned and working together. And so yet again, this is another example of a way for the sales and marketing teams to align and figure out what is most important. Gara, I feel like everything we've done, we are basically referencing back to our original, like, hey, we're back and we're going to talk about, and most of our podcasts have talked about, you know, the alignment and how crucial it is these days. You know, I feel like a few years ago, the alignment between a lot of teams wasn't necessarily as important, but especially in these elements of lead scoring and personas and everything else, having alignment with your teams is a really crucial part of it. Especially like Manisha, you said, you know, the funnel is the most important part for some people, or the engagement level and the way that the points are assigned. You can have points for everything so that it can be like a huge group effort rather than this is what we're focused on, this is what we're focused on. The point system can help both teams and help them be aligned.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. As we're talking about like assigning points, we also need to bring up the fact that you can do negative points too. So as we're looking at, like, you know, our examples of lead scoring models, you know, if somebody is not in the right market, so if we're looking at demographics, you could be targeting a certain market, but those that live outside that come into your ecosystem, if they're not the right market, you put negative points for them. So that way your sales team knows that they are not the person to reach out to, that they're probably not going to be the best fit for your organization. But some of those other lead scoring models can be, you know, like I said, the demographics, it can be company information. You can have points based off of like a particular industry, the size of the industry or the type. I know that some of my clients only go for like particular people within an organization. So not everybody in that org can be a member of that association. So you can do points that way, online behavior, email engagement. If somebody is opting into your emails, but then later on not engaging with those, you can do negative points for that as well. And then we have social engagement, of course, too.
Yeah, I love that. Especially the negative points, especially kind of referencing time as a measure. And again, going back to think about your own consumption behaviors, right? You're looking at something today, but are you still interested in the same thing 3 months from now? And so you can't assume that that interest is there. So often lead scoring mechanisms, you'll see like a time decay, like there's a decay over time where that score starts to, starts to degrade. And it's not a bad thing. I think a lot of people scramble and say, oh no, it's moved into negative this, or it's dropped by 17 points. That's okay. That's good, right? Because you want to focus on the people who are not just who have a heartbeat, but whose heart rate is accelerated or interested, right? Because they're expressing some sort of interest, right? So I think these mechanisms where you just leave it up to the algorithm, you got to trust, right? Like, do you guys feel like once you talk about lead scoring and you set something up, I think that's what's the curious factor here, because you do have to trust the mechanics of what's happening and what gets surfaced, right? So if they add it to their cart and they don't check out, and 3 months later you find this record, right? You find this contact and you're like, what do I do? Should you pick up the phone and be like, hi, you had something in your checkout cart from 3 months ago. Do you still want to buy?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Unless you're seeing that those people are engaging with some other kind of content, not necessarily checking out, but if they're downloading, if you have like white papers or things you're putting out there that they're downloading, that would be the only time I'd really think of maybe we should re-engage them in some way or capacity.
Yeah, because otherwise, Manisha, I think we're getting back to the misery thing of like, hi, you were here 3 months ago. let's creep back into your inbox. I think there's something to be said for, you know, I don't know if you've seen the new commercial with MailChimp where it's like, this is a cluster and it shows all of the emails. And have you seen this? No?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay, Ohio, with your advertising. MailChimp's got this new thing explaining in marketing how there's a cluster where if you're not paying attention to what your different engagement levels are with your accounts, then you just create a marketing cluster that's ineffective. And so, you know, not to name, that was just an ad that kind of stood out to me in the terms of with the scoring and everything else. If you're doing a scoring, you wouldn't develop these clusters. So there is that to be kind of said in that department. And the negative scoring actually helps kind of even out the engagement level as well. Like kind of figuring out, okay, they didn't do what we wanted them to do, but they also did these other things. Does that even out and still make them a valuable, you know, possibility or a possible person to put into the funnel? And it also, based on the way that they're scored, their engagement level creates this other level of personalization as well. So then that eliminates the, we're just going to throw spaghetti and see where it sticks element, I guess you could say.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. As an aside, Morgan, do you watch commercials on TV? Like, where did you see this ad?
So I will be honest, I do, my father pays for our family Hulu and he pays for Hulu, but only with commercials. So I get 90 second ads in my Hulu. And the other one that I've noticed is the Matthew McConaughey talking about how data is gold now that AI has come into. So that's AI, I know, is next month's topic, but I'm just setting that feeler out for people that do still watch commercials.
I just want to point out the fact that you are being targeted by marketing ads right now.
I know.
I know, like actual ads about marketing.
Okay. I know.
You know we are in this field. We're
in this world where all my commercials that I watch on my television are because my phone heard me say stuff and I work in marketing. They're like, you want all the marketing ads.
So give me all the data.
Give me all the data. Manisha, thanks for calling me out on the fact that I have like the low cost Hulu.
Just saying, I know very kind of opinionated people out there who are like, I'm not watching anything with commercials. We had to disclose, we literally had this conversation on a leadership call yesterday, and Adam Higgins, our CTO, and Ron McGrath, our CEO, both were like emphatic of like, heck no, not watching anything with commercials, have to go the ad-free subscription route.
I don't disagree with you. All of my other subscriptions that I have are ad free because myself or my brother are paying for them and we share the responsibility. But dad took Hulu, and the only reason I'm appreciative of Hulu is we got the Disney Plus bundle, so I can watch Disney stuff all the time. And so I'll take the 30 or 90 second commercials here and there to watch Schitt's Creek and Dateline. So,
well, it's funny because now Disney adds commercials before they start playing stuff too on Disney Plus. But right now you can skip it. So it may not last though.
All right. We got really off topic with how I'm targeted in marketing ads.
It's all coming back together. Yeah. There's a lot of synchronicity there, right? Because
he watches my commercials. Let's add a lead score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I am scoring very high in the marketing department for everything these days.
But
Manisha, so how do we know what matters most? How do we know, like, you know, the fact that, you know, with all the things we've been discussing and all the different ways and different points and different things, how do we determine what matters most in terms of, you know, is it by organization? Is it by the member itself? Is it individually? How do we determine what is the most important factors that we're going to go with in our lead scoring?
So no silver bullet, no magic formula, but it goes back to what your goals are at the organization and what you've been tasked with doing. That's why you'll often see multiple lead scoring schemas set up, right? One that's measuring engagement, one that's measuring unengagement, right? Others that are kind of designed to incentivize people to give more information. All of those, again, trying to manage or balance that unpredictability or that unknown quantity and try to put some sort of tangible evidence behind it. So what you're going to see is that there's no one right formula. I think the best way to kind of hack the system, if you will, is that everything you're talking about, right, comes with some sort of weighting system, right? So as Gara said, more points behind doing an activity versus 1 point for simply opening an email, right? Same thing. Everything that we've been talking about for like months and months now, right? About goals, having alignment between expectations and what you really want to accomplish really comes down to that. If you don't know what you want to manifest, there's no way to measure it. And so this is a measurement tactic that takes into a lot of the soft, squishy stuff that you can't quantify and tries to actually put a number behind it so you can quantify. What I like about this is that, and I found this really interesting, is that, you know, the human brain, we're wired to think like a bigger number is the best number and that's what we should do. But when you really think about it, low lead scores are what marketers focus on or should be focused on. High lead scores are what sales should be focused on and are focused on, right? And there's a tendency to say like, no, we're just going to go after the ones that are high, high numbers. But those are already quote unquote qualified. And if you've done everything that both of you have talked about over the past couple of months about getting that smart marketing alignment and talking through like, what do we want to do? All that kind of stuff. It should be very easy to kind of move them to that, you know, final conversion stage where marketers spend their time. They're looking at the ones with less than a heartbeat, like a score of 10 and not a threshold of 50, but who's like way, way below. And then going through that process, should we disqualify them and say like, hey guys, like just let them go. And that's a lot of work. So, you know, if you're wondering what is the marketing team focused on? It's a lot of work to sift through that data and say like, nope, you know, lead scores of -300, just leave them alone or delete them. They'll come back and we just got to trust in that process. Right. But really thinking about now that we've got a subset that we've got to cultivate, that's where you lean into all those marketing automation tools where you say, now we're going to do that drip, you know, campaign. Now we're going to do that nurture journey and push them along and see what helps, right? So it all kind of comes together. It's really interesting from that perspective because, I don't know, my brain's still wired to go after like, oh, that's a really exciting high, high number. Let's go after that person. And it's like, no, stay in your lane. You gotta let it go. It's hard to do sometimes.
It's definitely a lot to analyze and take a look at. So a lot of behind the scenes action happening with the marketing teams doing that. Mm-hmm. I know Morgan brought up that we were going to kind of talk about game theory as well and how that relates to lead scoring and marketing. And before I became a marketer, I didn't really know what game theory was. You know, to me, I'm thinking like video games and
I did too. I thought it was gamified. I thought we were doing, I thought there was lots of gaming involved. Yeah.
Which it does. It can relate to, you know, playing video games because it is about strategic decision making and like human behavior and social situations.
But
there is more to it than that. It's, you know, talking about competitive markets and situations, individuals trying to maximize their outcomes when there's uncertainty.
Yep.
So Manisha, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about that and how it relates to lead scoring. So I'll let you take over from here.
Yeah. So game theory again, I got exposed to game theory. So I did my undergrad in economics, and economics, I guess, is considered one of the harshest social sciences out there. The economists, they try to create models, you know, forget about the narratives or emotions or any of that stuff. They're very much like, if interest rates go up, what will happen to housing starts, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff, right? So I got introduced to game theory in an econometrics class. And really, what was interesting to me at the time was very much like trying to predict the future based on, or getting to a point where you could predict what somebody was going to do if you were to tell them something. And so the classic example, it's very Law and Order-esque, but you basically have two people who've committed a crime. You know they're connected. You put them in separate rooms, and then you work them. And you basically play them off of each other, saying like, so-and-so has cut a deal, or I know so-and-so is close. What are you going to do? Are you going to confess? And so at least that's what my professor tried to get us to kind of go with, right? So it's very much like tied to lead. To me, it's very much tied to lead scoring in that way, especially when it comes down to sitting down and building that schema, right? If you're thinking about your lead scoring schema and like what points should we ask or add or detract or that kind of thing, it's basically game theories are those tools that allow you to study the reactions to things that you're introducing that allow you to kind of siphon off or just eliminate through the process of elimination, figuring out what the actual solution is, right? So in certain situations where, as he said, like, hey, there's an anonymous group of users that have done really questionable things that lead us to believe that they are interested in possibly a prospect pool, but I don't know, if you look at them on paper, these are not our target audiences. They don't have the right job titles. They show up to a lot of stuff, right? I think a lot of associations and nonprofits saw this when we were right in the height of the pandemic and everybody was locked in at home, and they saw their webinar rates skyrocket, and they got all these new contacts that they didn't know anything about. And, you know, if you look at them on paper, they're like, we've never heard of you. We don't even know that, we don't even think that your job title is relevant to what we offer, but not only did you attend, but you keep coming back, right? So where's, like, what's going on here? What should we do? And you can't pick up the phone and call them. I mean, you could, I guess, but unlikely. So here comes game theory and kind of figuring out, like, okay, if I ask you this, what will you do? And then going through that series of, if you do this, then okay, one more point for me in figuring out who you are and what else, you know, what else should I ask you to figure out if I can qualify you, or really I should ignore you and leave you alone. So in my mind, that's where the game theory, you're basically, you're playing the game, right? You're just kind of trying to see like, what will you do if I tell you that, oh, your partner in crime has confessed? If you don't confess right now, you will miss the deal that the guy in the other room is, you know, signing up for. And you know, right? The answer is like, of course they're not doing that. But, you know, good cop, bad cop. I watch a lot of, clearly, right?
I really appreciate this Law and Order reference, because I have to watch it with commercials with my Hulu. I do watch, I'm a very big Law and Order person. So like, as soon as you started with the analogy, I'm like, oh, I got this. So
nope.
I do appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. And I like how that can be used for lead scoring, or even just in other situations where if you're trying to push a product and somebody else has that same or similar product, how you can put it above and go above and beyond to get that out there. Any other final thoughts on game theory or lead scoring at all, Morgan, Manisha?
I think everybody thinks it's hard to do, right? You don't need a lot of technology. So here's the plug here, right? You could do game theory and lead scoring all on your own in an Excel spreadsheet, but it's kind of a beast to assign the activities and the weighting and stuff. So if you've got a system that lets you do it, take advantage of it. I think a lot of people get stuck in the planning or the real details of like, it should be 5 points versus 15. Like, don't get caught up in that, right? Just pick a number and try it out. I think that's what's really neat about it, is that you can change at any point in time. You can have multiple lead scoring schemas, and then you can change one number and see what happens. And if nothing's happening, then probably that's not the right thing to assign a score to, right? So you can just basically point to it and say, hey, everyone, two things we can infer here. One, it's not useful in our determination of whether this is a warm lead or not, or anything along those lines. But also, hey, did anybody know? Nobody's looking at the pricing page. So, you know, it's a different way to surface things that people may not, you know, may not have their eyes on, because it's not their wheelhouse, if you will.
Yeah, I like that.
Me too.
So that kind of leads us into next month's topic. So on next month's episode, we're going to be discussing leveraging the power of AI, since that's a hot topic right now in the tech world, and relating that to marketing strategy. So join us next time on Rethink Association.